polls, so.
Okay, we have a lot to do today, so let's get started. This is to call the City Council work session for November 15th, 2021 to order. Peggy, roll call, please.
Jacoby?
Here.
Goble?
Here.
Mateo?
Here.
Sawyer?
Here. And Parker and Hall will be a little late this afternoon.
Hall is here.
I am here.
Oh, hi, CM.
I see her face.
There she is. Hi. Okay, Spencer.
Okay, so we've got a number of things to deal with before our 6 o'clock meeting. For the work session, we're going to have a discussion on the maintenance of road vegetation, and Public Works Director David Paul will give an overview of that. We're going to talk a little bit about kind of the next steps regarding the how we're going to handle the issues following the failure of the two ballot measures that were on the November 2nd ballot. We've got about 15 minutes for that discussion, and then want to talk a little bit about restoring the deputy city recorder position to full-time position. We've allowed about 10 minutes for that, and then we're going to have a fairly quick executive session at the end of the meeting. Then at 5 o'clock, we'll have our urban renewal meeting starting at that time. So we need to be fairly concise in this meeting. So again, starting with the road vegetation maintenance map, over the years, we have had a variety of practices in dealing with areas that the city actually mows the right-of-way area versus having the private property owners mow it. From time to time, there's been times we've mowed it. There's times we said that's not our responsibility. And one of the things that David Powell has put together with his crews is a kind of a map that will direct Public Works, the Parks Department, and also be a reference for private citizens as far as who's maintaining that piece of right-of-way in front of that area. And as you know, by ordinance, the adjacent property owners are responsible for maintaining certain things in the right-of-way in front of their properties as they maintain their own property. And then we have unusual situations where we've got rural stretch of roads where the property may be on the backside of a bottom of a hill, and the home actually fronts on another side. And so there's a lot of different circumstances here. But what I'd like is for David Paul to kind of run through his maps and show you kind of what we are responsible for. And then when the city is responsible for it, we've also designated between Parks Maintenance and Public Works those responsibility areas, and then where the property owners are responsible. So at this point, I'll turn it over to David to give a overview of what they've done to date on this project. And again, we want to present this for any feedback from the council. And I think having something documented like this is going to save a lot of heartburn going forward in the future. So David.
Okay, thanks, Spencer. Peggy, can I share my screen?
You should be able to. Do you have your document up on your screen? Okay,
there you go.
It's working.
Is it going?
Yep.
Perfect. Okay, so like Spencer said, from time to time we've had, areas that were mowed by city crews or areas that were not mowed by city crews, and it's kind of been hit and miss on and off over the years. It's caused confusion amongst the city as well as the city population. And so we had these questions, throughout the year, why isn't this maintained? You guys used to maintain this. You maintain this area, this side of the street. You don't maintain the other side. That kind of thing. So Justin Scarborough, who's my the head of my streets crews, was kind of pulled in different directions. And finally, I just said, hey, let's just put it down in a document. Where you mow, where parks and maintenance mows, and then we can all have this kind of this common understanding of what the program is for the city. So we got this brainstorm about putting together this map, and the map, it seems like an easy concept, but then you have to present the map. So we've got it broken up into four different areas that you can kind of zoom into. And there are really three purposes for this program, as I outlined in the staff memo. It's to develop a common understanding of what we're where we mow and what the program is, and then to quantify the level of effort that it takes to actually do the road maintenance, vegetation maintenance in the city. And then the other thing is to manage and schedule crews to actually go out and do that. So the next step for me is to put together a schedule like a Microsoft project schedule that shows where we're going to mow and when we're going to mow it, and when we're going to maintain it. So eventually this will go onto our website, and so the public can be able to go on here and take a look at the schedule and where we're going to mow and those kind of things. Ultimately, it's just a communication tool that will clear up confusion over time. So getting back to the map, I've got this map here is the overview. It shows four different blow-ups of the city. The green colors are in a legend right here. So the green are areas that are mowed by city crews per the municipal code. Those are areas that are adjacent to city-owned property. The red lines are mowed for safety purposes, like site safety or sidewalks that people are walking on where the vegetation's grown out on it, and the homeowner is like up the hill or not present. The areas that are in blue are mowed by Parks and Recreation. And then city-owned property is outlined in yellow. And then city easements are kind of this light magenta color. So this is the first map, and I'll just kind of scroll down here. And one thing I need to do on these maps is probably put some streets on here for reference. Not all the streets could be shown because they'll just make it too busy. But you can see, if I go to map two, I'm more familiar with these streets down here. Here's this green line is Big Creek Road. Of course, we own this property, so this is colored in green. But then the red here is the one-way street that goes up to Sam Case School right here. These homeowners here would technically be responsible for one side of the road. It doesn't get maintained, so we maintain it. Here's down along Ocean View Drive, areas there that the homeowners or the property owner's responsibility, but we go ahead and mow it and maintain it for safety purposes. So we can go on down. Here's Chambers Court, and here's Sam Case School. So you kind of got a reference. You can get a reference from landmarks that you recognize on this map, but again, I think it's probably better to go ahead and add some street names. Like here's Yquanta Heights Drive in red, but then like up here at San Bayo Court, we've had lots of discussions with Nyla Jevosek. We're maintaining the outside of the road there. The inside is not shown as being done by city staff at this time. When we scroll down to the third map, you can see here's the bayfront. There's a lot of red on this map where we maintain these areas for safety purposes. And then scroll on down to South Beach. You can see, this is going up to the wastewater plant. This is 40th, I guess. This is the sewer plant road. And then the last map down goes further down south to the airport. So I hope this is a a good reference for the city council. That's basically, you know, what the program that we're putting together. Like I said in the staff report, this is a work in progress. It's certainly not perfect. And if you have suggestions for improvement or clarification, please, please don't hesitate to suggest that.
Yeah.
And with that, that's all I have. I got Justin Scarborough on the phone. Also, if there's any questions you have specific to the map, again, Mike Cavanaugh and his crew worked on this really hard. Justin Scarborough did most of the work for on the green and the red areas, and then Melissa Roman with our engineering department put it all together on the map. And I just wanted to give a shout out to those three people. They worked hard on this for us.
No, I think again, appreciate the work that Justin and Melissa and the parks crew and you did on pulling this together. But I would ask the council to, you know, when you get a chance, take a look at it. If you have any comments, you can forward those comments to both David and myself regarding the areas that are identified for city maintenance. If the areas aren't identified for city maintenance, then the responsibility is for the right-of-way areas are up to the property owners that are adjacent to those areas to maintain those areas. And I think, again, we'll get a finalized map that I think will be very useful for the street department and for parks and rec. It should clear up some confusion on who's doing what and who's responsible for certain areas. So with that, we've got a few minutes for any questions or comments from the council on this at this point. Or like I said, this is a work in progress. So if you have any other thoughts on this, you can communicate that to us after the meeting as well. So any questions from the council on what we're trying to accomplish here?
I just have one comment, and this is kind of for Dave, I would suppose. I get a lot of complaints from time to time about how come the city's not mowing in front of my house. And I think that once you get this finished product, that we need to publish this as much as we can, so everybody in town can look at it and go, well, there's my house. They're not going to do my in front of my house, and then we can talk about it at that point. But I think most people just don't know what their responsibilities are.
Right. And when we put this up on the website, maybe the municipal code section could help clarify questions like that, because it speaks directly to the vegetation maintenance of the city right-of-ways. So I'll stop sharing my screen, and we're back to you.
Yep. Any other questions or comments from the council on this effort?
Beatrice?
David, thank you very much. That's a really good presentation, and I really like the map, and also posting that information on the website. It really gives direction to the citizens. And I also want to say, because I don't know if everybody knows the initials, the NMC. It's an abbreviation. Can you make it full name? So for some people, we might not understand NMC. Sure. Thank you.
No, that's
Newport Municipal Code.
Yeah, that's a good reminder, because we understand that, but not everyone does. So, other oops.
Deber.
Yeah, I'll fill my whole screen with my hand, yeah. Spencer, now, okay, so the adjacent property owner's responsibility for maintenance on the right-of-way, what actually does that mean? Do they maintain the trees? Do they maintain the shrubs? Do they maintain line of sight? Is that all the responsibility of the homeowner or the adjacent property owner?
Yeah, the Newport Municipal Code puts that responsibility on the adjacent property owner. So, for example, and we've had number of complaints in areas where tree branches are extending out into sidewalk areas or tree branches are extending into the roadway area where we've got clear vision areas. The code specifically holds the property owners responsible for maintaining to certain standards vegetation in the right-of-way in front of their properties.
So do they not then have to go to the city to get approval for maintaining that vegetation? Is that right?
They don't need, as far as mowing and brush control, that sort of stuff, they don't need permission. They do need permission for trees over a certain size if they're looking at removing a tree in the right-of-way. That goes through our tree process, and I can't remember what the caliber limitation is on the size of the trunk before that falls into that category.
Okay,
if no more questions, we'll move on, and Dave, thank you for your time and for all your work on this project.
You bet, my pleasure. Thank you.
Spencer.
The next item that we wanted to spend a little time talking about is the recent ballot measures that were placed before the voters on November 2nd. Again, we had the two proposals on the ballot on November 2nd. The first would have placed a tax on prepared foods within the city to fund several positions in the police department, fire department, and the library, as well as funding for capital needs for our facilities. The second proposal was on the gas tax increase, which would have gone directly towards funding the resurfacing and replacement of streets in the community. The food tax failed on a little greater than a 2-to-1 basis. The gas tax was a little closer, but still a pretty good margin on the yes votes from the no votes for those two proposals. If you look in your packet, I attached a copy of an updated projection for the general fund, and that's under the discussion of the ballot measure, and that's the attachment that's listed there. If you can bring that up to take a look at. I just wanted to kind of outline where we are at based on plugging in new data and looking forward to that. So if you can bring that up and take a look at that, there's a couple things I want to point out to you. In the general fund, based on our existing revenue, and based on our existing expenditures that are using this year as a baseline, we're actually fairly stable in the general fund operating as we are right now. So that means not adding any police officers, not adding any firefighters, not adding any library positions. The one concerning issue is, backing up a little further, we did plug in the ARPA funds that we received in 21-22 and what we're projected to receive in 22-23. What we've done for purposes of this analysis is we're showing those as an increase in capital project expenditures just so that it doesn't mess up too much with our projected trends, because again, it's a two years of funds that will be coming directly to the city for specific projects identified by the council. And so the assumption here is that these funds are going to be used for some capital needs versus operational needs. So you see them come in under federal sources, and you see them going out under a transfer out to other funds for capital projects. But the challenge that we have going forward is that if you look on the bottom of the chart, you'll see transfer out to other funds capital projects, and of course we've got the two shots of the ARPA funding in the mix here. After that funding is going away, if you look in the 23-24 year, you'll see an expenditure amount for capital outlay of about $113,000. What we were, if the food tax had been approved, that would have provided a little over $1 million for going out to capital projects. And that includes new roofs, new siding, new windows. That also includes some continued enhancement to our park systems as well. And so basically, you know, that's being underfunded by about $900,000 based on this existing projections. The other area that is underfunded based on these projections is what we identified for capital outlay equipment needs, and that was again under the proposal we would have gotten about $600,000 for that. We've got about $400,000 appropriated in this current fiscal year for equipment, and that's projected forward as well. And so again, we're still in the same position of not having enough funds for the investment in our facilities in order to keep the community and keep these facilities operating and serving the community well. So that, in the short answer, that's the biggest problem going forward if we aren't looking at any expansion in public safety or police or library staffing going forward, which would have been covered under that proposal. The other issue, of course, is the funding for the streets. You know, we would have generated additional funding of $300,000 or so a year with the gas tax proposal that was before the voters. Again, we do have our gas tax that's designated for street improvements right now, and so we do have some money coming into that. We also have some of our street fund that goes into that as well, again, we're far short of the $2 million a year that was shown to be needed to be invested in our street system in order to maintain a level quality of street service over the next 20 years. So those are the issues that we're battling with the current budget and the current projections going forward. And so that's something that we're going to have to give some thought to as far as how we address that in future years. I think what my intent is will be to carve out a section of our goal setting session to really talk specifically about the financial situation for the city and what alternatives that we should be looking at going forward. These can be addressed by further reducing services to provide funding for needed capital improvements. It could be done through other sources of revenue that were identified in the finance plan that was approved by the finance work group. And so those are the discussions that we'll need to have, and proposing to do that in January as part of our goal setting processes for this coming year. To get feedback from the council on what options seem to be best. The council could also take a look at the proposals that were on the ballot and consider, you know, making modifications or clarifications or adjusting any of those and considering something in the May election as well. You know, the good news is it's not causing an immediate crisis, but it certainly is causing a longer term crisis as far as, you know, the level of investment we need to continue making in our facilities. One other thing too that we'll be sharing with the council is we had a facilities evaluation conducted of our major facilities supported by the general fund, and over the next 5 years that report identified in varying amounts from year to year, but it averaged around $1 million a year investment that we should be making in our existing facilities going forward, which kind of tracks with the numbers we were working with on a projected basis here. And we'll be presenting that report to the council in January as well, so that that council can see, you know, what types of investments are needed in order to maintain our facilities in the community. So So again, just a brief introduction on this issue. We are updating all our projections, and the tool that we've got in place is really helpful to look at what if scenarios. And so we hope to be able to do a little bit of that during our January work session on goal setting. So any questions on any of that?
This is CM. I am still trying to get my laptop to start, but I do have a question around this, but it's more about I heard feedback from folks in the community about some of the campaign tactics of the no side on the food and beverage tax, and I want to pursue that as a part of the city of Newport. I think we should, you know, like if they're going to campaign, they have to campaign with integrity, and they have to put, if they're going to put out mail pieces, they have to say who is paying for it. And there was at least one mail piece that came through that didn't have who it was paid for by. So I'd like us to file to the Secretary of State's Elections Division on that matter, because they can make a lot of false assertions, and there should be a consequence around that. And I also still, you know, I had reservations about the timing on it. I know that you got wisdom that that was the right timing. I just, I was concerned about low voter turnout being a culprit. So I'm not certain when I know the next step is. I'm also very curious about what amount of salary savings there is from positions that are unfilled that might help us kind of, you know, study for a longer term, which you essentially talked a little bit about, Spencer.
Yeah, and one of the things too is in the projections in the general fund, we're estimating a 5% vacancy of budgeted positions going forward in the future. You know, we're well below that now, which kind of shows up in the numbers. But I think there is a reality that the market's going to be such that we're going to be living with vacancies for longer periods of time. You know, at least in the foreseeable future. The other thing that's not factored into these projections at all is, you know, some of the issues that are happening with cost of living. How is that going to impact wages? How is that going to impact other operating costs for the city? You know, in order to maintain being a competitive workplace, what are we going to have to do in order to keep our compensation equal to our, you know, competitors going forward as well? And so those are all factors that that we'll be digging in a little deeper. But this is a good place to start as far as kind of understanding what the impacts are based on the you know, the projections that that we have. And I'll be providing a complete set of the projections for you, you know, in January, so that that you can start looking at that in light of our goal setting session.
Demar.
So Spencer, there was also some discussion recently about looking at the room tax as a possibility going to the legislature or something and asking for that to be undesignated. Is that something that we're going to pursue, or?
Yes, we've got actually a work session scheduled in March. That, you know, in order to get legislation like that going forward, it'll be for the next legislative session, not the short session that they will have, you know, this year, because they're typically dealing with straight out budgetary issues. But I think we want to be in a position to advocate for legislation that would ease up the restrictions on the spending of room taxes. So that's something, again, we've got a March work session that we're gonna be focusing on that. We wanna invite the league to participate in that session and start getting that lined up. When the league does their priorities in the summer and the legislature starts issuing their legislators start are allowed to start implementing potential bills in the next legislative session. So that's kind of the timing that we're looking at for that.
So that wouldn't come into effect till 2022-23 then, or?
Correct. Yeah, it wouldn't come into effect until after the next legislative session, which won't be in 2012, but it'll be in 2013. And typically, legislation that's changed doesn't go into effect until January 1st of 2024. Excuse me, I said a decade off here.
But, yeah, you were a decade off.
Yeah. But but anyway. And for us, we've got a little bit of grace period, in here, because we aren't in from a day-to-day operational standpoint, we aren't in any economic crisis. We came through COVID really pretty strongly, in part because we made some difficult decisions, going into COVID. I want to make sure everyone doesn't understand that this isn't a question about whether we keep the doors open next year to City Hall or our other facilities. But the question is, we've got these long-term commitments that we have not been able to keep up with, and we're falling farther and farther behind on reinvestment into, the facilities, and that's something that's a real cost that we need to, acknowledge. We need to not only acknowledge it, we need to find a way to make those improvements or divest ourselves of some of these facilities over the long run. So,
yeah, I mean, we're right now by just deferred maintenance, we're going into about $1.3 million into the hole every year, right?
Yeah, or what was the question, Dietmar?
I'd say by deferred maintenance by 23. Right. We're going in the hole about $1.3 million every year after that, right?
No, and the other thing, too, that is a factor in when the consideration of delaying these sorts of necessary reinvestments, two things happen. One is our buildings, like the library is a good example. We have a roof that we can't replace in a timely fashion, then that causes problems with the walls, and that causes problems with other components of the building, so by the time we do it, it's more expensive. The other component is, based on the cost for making major infrastructure investments in buildings, those are going up 5% every year. So the longer you push that off, you're increasing the amount of repairs that you have to make for facilities, and you're doing it at a higher price. And so that's the that's kind of the situation that we're in, and we need to figure a pathway out of that. So,
well, short of increasing revenue, I don't see it, or getting rid of staff, I don't see how you can get out of it.
I don't either. And I reported this in my status report that's going out tomorrow. But Don Davis actually made an appointment to see me, and he's kind of advocating for a 5-year tax issue for that versus the prepared food tax, because he says he absolutely knows that we need the money, and he just thinks that's a better tool going forward. The catch with that is, of course, it puts the entire burden on the taxpayers of the community, and that's something we're trying to avoid. But the community is, has given us some direction on this, and we need to acknowledge that
I just paid my tax bill today, Spencer. I wasn't too excited about it.
Yeah.
But I think that's the case for most people in town. I mean, the burden keeps falling on the 5,000 units that are paying taxes in the community. I think we need to find another way to fund some of this stuff. But so, I look forward to the meeting on, what do you say, January? We're going to start talking about this.
Yeah, it'll be the second Monday in January. I think that's January 10th, maybe. No, second Monday in January. Yep, the 10th.
Okay, Cynthia, and then CM.
out. Thank you. Now, I just wanted to say I was just terribly disappointed that we did not seem to be able to get the facts across of this rather complicated issue. I had people tell me, but we don't want our food taxed. You know, it just didn't seem to get through very well to folks. They were feeling it was very regressive. I think maybe it's just the anti-sales tax feeling in Oregon overall that makes this such a tough haul. I don't know how to make the budget balance except for on the backs of the folks who actually live in Newport at this point.
Yeah, I think the one thing.
I'm just going to ask you, Spencer. What part of this keeps you up at night the most? I think the police and fire safety is it for me.
Yeah, particularly on the for me on the fire side of things, just because of the limited staffing that we have, that's a real concern. But the other concern I have is watching facilities deteriorate, and we can't fix them. And you know, we've got a very substantial investment in facilities in this community, and every year that we push off maintenance to these facilities, a good example in our budget committee member, Michael Seidel. Michael used the example of the animal shelter as an example. When you don't make needed investments, now all of a sudden you've got to build a whole new animal shelter. And the concern I've got is that we're going to be in that same situation. The one thing, too, in looking at this last election, two things that were problematic from my standpoint. One is we didn't have any sort of advocacy group that was there that could advocate, and spend some money, saying vote yes on this issue. So that was one of the challenges we had, particularly with well-funded effort that was put on by the restaurant folks in the community. So again, it was lopsided that way. From a city staff standpoint, we can't take a position on it. We can just explain the position. So that's definitely a handicap in these sorts of situations. And so I think we really didn't have enough lead time to thoroughly explain this process and why it's important. And perhaps as we're looking at other alternatives, this might become a more attractive alternative for folks going forward in the future. But we'll initiate those discussions in January. So,
CM and then Beatrice.
I can't remember what my thought was. Go on to Beatrice. If I remember, I'll raise my hand again.
Go ahead, Beatrice.
I want to say thank you, Spencer, for showing the budget. This part is, and going through is very important, and reviewing together. And I just, there's something that I want to ask about the building maintenance. Where is the track of every building? Who keeps that tracking information, what is needed? Certain time, like at deadlines and things like that, who is keeping that information for every building?
Yeah, well, actually, up until this summer and this fall, the best data we had was coming from our maintenance guys regarding needs for buildings, but typically that wasn't really forecasting needs; that was reacting to problems that we were having with buildings. And by the time we're reacting to problems we're having with buildings, typically some damage occurs that increases the cost of addressing that. But what we did this summer, the city council budgeted and we completed a third party analysis of all our major facilities, and they went through every facility and actually inventoried all the major components of all our facilities, the HVAC systems and the roofs and all the pieces of the building, and they identified a five-year plan of what we really need to be doing to our buildings. It would have been great to have that piece earlier in this process to, you know, to explain to people what needs to be done, but we do have that at this point, and we'll be reviewing that with the council in January. And it's I think it's going to put us in a much better position to really understand, as Dietmar indicated, understand how far behind we are on maintenance if we don't make these investments going forward. And so every year that we don't make that investment, we're compounding that problem, you know, by, you know, adding that to future years' reinvestment needs. So
is any way to when we are looking the time for every building, who is going to make that assessment that there's a priority one building instead other building? I just kind of trying to figure out here, you know, how we're going to, because if several buildings that are needing, maintenance, but who makes that a kind of assessment and utilizing, you know, first the money that we going to use in certain building or how, I just trying to figure out, sure. Spencer, that information.
Yeah, internally, what's happened before we conducted this evaluation of all our facilities is, each department would identify, you know, what needs they felt they had with their facilities. All that would go to engineering, and then engineering would work to cost out, what those improvements are, and then we would go through a prioritization process after looking at that data. But again, the problem with that process is that typically something didn't get on the list until we were already having problems with it. It wasn't projecting in the future that the life of a roof is 25 years. Now that doesn't mean it's going to leak in the 26th year, but you start having problems that can cause damage that's not even detectable, you know, once you start having that roof fail. And so I think the tool that we're using through Dude Solutions, they sent a crew here, went through with our personnel through all our buildings and really developed that laundry list and that list of highest priorities for a five-year plan to reinvest in our buildings. So I think we've got something, a much better tool than we've ever had. Unfortunately, we don't necessarily have the finances to fund what we need to fund in that area. So that's going to be the issue that we've got to deal with.
Thank you, Spencer.
TM?
I just remember my thought, and this has come up before a couple of times, but I can't remember where it has landed. It's not a cure-all, but it's a part of a solution around setting up like a friends of for some of the different entities. Like we have the library, we have the 60 plus, so we talked about parks, we talked about art. I feel like we talked about art, but don't quote me on this. And I'm just wondering, like, is that a potential a way to address some of this?
As far as fundraising?
Sorry, yes, fundraising.
Yeah, it could be for certain beloved facilities, such as the PAC or the VAC. It's a little harder for things like public works facilities, fire halls, city right. halls, restrooms, things that we have. So and again, the work that the OCCA has done in fundraising for the PAC is a good example of how that can work for something that's kind of an iconic building. So, and we do have, the group that's been formed to, for the rec center. We've got the library foundation that has been very helpful in providing outside funds for work at the library. So that is a valid tool for certain facilities.
I think there's some other things that we can do. Spencer and I met twice with the Oregon Restaurant Lodging Association, once over the room tax increase and once over the food tax. And they know our position. They fully sympathize with us. It's not that they're mean people or anything, But I think that if we could probably meet with them again and sit down and talk about the percentages of the room tax, maybe they could relax their position with the legislature in the next session, and maybe we can get some changes there. The other thing, obviously, is we can also work with the League of Oregon Cities. You know, they bring this up every legislative session to talk about the imbalances of our tax situation statewide. And I think, you know, Dietmar touched on that earlier, but I think that's another thing that we can work with the League on to try to get some statewide support to change these things, because it's not going to happen here in Newport. It's going to have to be a statewide issue. And, you know, as Cynthia said earlier, nobody in Oregon likes taxes, sales taxes. So that's always a difficult hurdle to jump.
Dean, we better move on unless there's anything else.
Okay, go ahead with the city recorder.
I can do that one. So the last thing that we had for the work session before the executive session is talking about the deputy city recorder position. This is a position that was full-time. We cut that back to half-time in preparation for COVID. Peggy keeps on saying she wants to retire. We're in the process of recruiting that position for the assistant city manager, city recorder position. The one thing that I really think we have to consider doing is putting that deputy city recorder position back to a full-time position going forward. We've had a hard time recruiting for a part-time position. It's going to be a critical position to have stability in order to really be able to bring who's ever in the assistant city manager's position, put them in a position where they're able to fill in during my absence, and certainly fill in while the council's selecting a replacement for me in two or three years in this position. And so I just wanted to run that by the council quickly to see if there's what your thoughts are on bumping that back up to a full-time position instead of the half-time position that is currently in the budget.
Dietmar.
So my immediate question, Spencer, is that the projections that you just presented, has that already been put into that projection city recorder?
It has not. So the projections were based on our existing budgeted positions.
And they also the position for recorder / interim assistant city manager, that's going to be an increase in salary, right?
I would imagine. But that is included in the projections.
So that's included in projections.
Yeah, that's included in the projections. The deputy city recorder is in the projections as a half-time instead of a full-time position.
Well, unless we get some more money, I don't see how we can do it, Spencer. Where are you going to find the money?
Yeah, that's always the question, and the problem is we're losing Peggy in January. Originally in January, she's agreed to reluctantly stay on until we get stabilized in this position, which might be another 5 years from now, I told her. So, we really are going to be in a hard way if we don't have the proper people in these two positions.
The only thing I can see is that we don't transfer money out of the general fund. And if we continue to transfer money out of general fund, we won't have it there for salary, right?
Right. It all fits into this whole balance discussion as well. And we can rerun the projection showing that as a full-time position, bring back to you at the December 6th meeting. But just wanted to have a brief discussion on this issue with council and get your thoughts on this matter.
I'd love to have that position filled, but I also don't want the city to continue to go in a deficit every year, you know, by $500,000 or $1 million like we've been doing, you know. So so I don't know what to tell you other than let's figure out a way to fund it, and then I'll support it.
Okay, CM.
I as much as I would like to not accept folks' ideas of retirement, this is such a critical position. We do need someone who's willing to commit to us in a long-term relationship, truly, and as soon as possible, so we can get some of that institutional knowledge that is in Peggy's brain, you know, and hand that off. I mean, there is not a manual big enough for what operations, you know, and know-how Peggy has. So yes, I'm in favor of us being able to do this because, right, I mean, and I think we're just going to have to figure it out down the road financially. That's the hard part, is this feels immediate. This, we're trying to compete with so many folks going in, you know, that aren't looking at us, and we have to try to be attractive, but a part-time position is not attractive right now.
Well,
yeah, go ahead.
CM, I would agree with that, CM. I just keep stating that we also have to be fiscally responsible. And if we run the city into the dirt fiscally, I don't see how we as a council can put our constituents and say we did a great job, you know. So I'm...
This is a part of us being fiscally responsible, truly, because the return on this investment now has legs, right? Like, we need someone who can be there. I'm not hearing the part about Spencer saying 2 to 3 years. We're going to reject that part. But like Spencer being here, but Peggy being gone, like we need someone who can bridge that, right? And so I think that this shows our care for the city, even though, like, yes, I understand how you could make an argument for we have to be fiscally responsible. I think this is us being fiscally responsible.
Well, the argument I would say is, and Peggy, I know that you need that position, but the argument I would say is, like Spencer's always said, positions are there forever. Capital projects are 1 year at a time, you know. So if we fund a position, we're going to have to think about that for 20 years, you know, that person's going to be around for 20 years. So we'll have to deal with it on a budget that we just can't. Then we just deferred more maintenance, basically. I mean, capital projects will suffer. Something, if we hire that position, put full-time, something has to suffer if we don't increase our revenue.
Yeah, I think, you know, CM kind of touched on it. You know, the county's had a hard time finding their administrative manager right now. And those top-end jobs, there just aren't people out there for them. And so it's going to be difficult to find somebody, I think, anyway, in the first place.
No,
so
I agree. I agree.
I think with that, I think we need to move on to the executive session.
Yeah. So just closing that out, what we will do is we'll have a report on the December 6th meeting. We'll rerun the projection showing what that would look like from what you have here today to what that would look like if we included that position, so that you have that information going forward. So, but yeah, at this point, if we can have a motion to go into executive session, that'll keep us on schedule.
I'll move. We go into executive session pursuant to ORS 192.660, subsection 2, subsection E, to discuss real estate transactions.
Motion made by Councilor Goble, seconded by Councilor Hall. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, motion carries. We're now in executive session.
Not yet.
Wait a second. I need a minute.
Yeah, we have to, and Jan will be losing you for the executive session, but we'll be back at 5 o'clock for urban renewal if you want to sit through that. So,
oh, cancel that.
Do you have Derek coming on?
Well, Spencer, I hope that that January 2nd or January meeting will be fruitful and productive. I hope you have some magic wand or something.
Yeah, I don't